welcome to another episode of Magic the Pro the Ring, brought to you by you, the great people of Patreon, who have supported us so long that we decided to make another series for you for free.
That's right. This is our, maybe the sixth episode of Magic the Pro the Ring. It might be a different number, but we're calling it six. So
yeah,
that's
sure.
The one that it is now.
Yep. Where we talk to magic pros about strategy, their lives, why they're so dang darn good at magic, and what tips they have for other people so that they can become better players as well.
Absolutely. This episode of Magic the Pro the Ring, we are joined by none other than Jerry Thompson. Welcome, Jerry.
Hi. I like that introduction. That's great.
Thank you. Yeah. We worked exactly 0 minutes on it.
But it's because we're such professionals at the podcasting.
Yeah, that's true.
We know how to say things at the same time.
Yeah.
So, welcome to the podcast. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you do as a magic professional right now?
So, magic is my only source of income. It's kind of sweet, actually. I basically work 2 days a week. I do an article and a video per week on Star City Games. And then on the weekend, I'm just traveling to tournaments.
Wow, that's like, for a lot of people, I think that's sort of their definition of living the magic dream. You know, you're making it work for yourself, and you're getting to compete a lot.
Yeah, it's not great. Or not bad, I mean. You know what I meant.
Yes.
Freudian slip there, maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
For a second, I was like, oh, we just got our first, hit a nerve. Well, I mean, I understand from talking to enough pros that, I mean, it is like a hard life. Like, you have to keep up your magic play skill. You have to be on the cusp of every, like, new cutting edge deck, that sort of thing. And you've got to make it work publishing a lot of articles. And we actually wanted to talk to you about your writing, because you do write for Star City Games so often, and what it's like to kind of have to innovate and come up with new content all the time for them.
I think I could actually write more if they would let me. So that part is actually easy for me. Like, I think the thing that I do differently is that I am so immersed in magic. Like, I look at basically all the deck lists from all the different tournaments, and I'm always, like, thinking about different ways to tweak decks and stuff. Like, I always carry a notebook, and, like, now I've started using my phone. I have a bunch of notes and stuff. And it's like, there's so much going on in magic with all these different decks. I think I could write even more articles per week if they would let me. So that's actually easy. That's the funnest part of my job almost by far. Then the videos are just like, you know, they're fine. They are what they are. I kind of enjoy doing them most of the time, you know. But yeah.
Awesome. So would you say, like, your articles, a lot of it is just inspiration that you get while you're out at a tournament playing different decks?
Sometimes it's like a theory article. Like, this week, that's kind of what I'm working on. It's just like something that's been sitting in my phone, and I'll add little things to it over time. It's like, okay, yeah, we have like enough for an article here. Sometimes it is like you go to a tournament, someone has like this new awesome deck, but a lot of the time it's like, you know, some new cards come out, and then you look back on like some old decks. Like, formats like Modern, Legacy are great for this, where a new card comes out and it's like, oh, that would slot in like really nice here. And then you start doing some brewing and stuff, and it's just one thing leads to another.
I want to go back in time with you now, Jerry, to when you first started playing Magic. And of course, you've been very successful in your career. 9 Grand Prix top eights, 2 wins, Pro Tour Gatecrash top eight, 6 Star City Games Invitational top eights, 2 wins there. I mean,
that was so many numbers.
It was a lot of numbers, and all of them impressive.
Let me stop you there. That's actually outdated. I have a GP top eight and another Invitational top eight this year.
Oh, okay. So you've got 3. Wait, okay. How many? Oh my gosh. So 7 Star City Games top eights?
Yep.
Okay.
All and right. One more to the Grand Prix. So 10 Grand Prix top eights?
Double digits.
Whoa.
Nice.
Sweet.
You have to use all of your fingers to count them. Assuming you have the normal number.
Oh, yeah, good point. We don't want to look past those 11-fingered people.
Exactly. Or 9,
yeah.
Anyways.
So what I want to say is, like, you've had a very storied career already, but how did it all begin for you? How did you get started playing Magic?
Like, when I think about where I am now and how it all started, it's all pretty weird, I guess. Like, I was always pretty poor. And then the first day it was legal for me to get a job was when I turned 15, so I did. Just, you know, wanted to start working, earn some money, and do some stuff. And I was trying to bond with one of my coworkers, like a kid who was in my grade, and we just went back and forth with, like, things that we did. you know? And he's just like, you know, I'm interested in this. I'm like, no, pass. And then I'm like, I do this. And he's like, no, pass. And then he would name a thing. And then eventually he named Magic. And I was like, oh, I have some of those cards. Like, I bought some because it had, like, a dragon on the package. And I liked fantasy stuff. But I never had anyone who actually, like, played, you know? So they just kind of, like, sat in a shoebox or something for a while until he found out that I had some cards. And he's like, oh, come on over. I'll build you a deck and I'll teach you how to play and stuff. So then... did that. He built me an elf deck, and in exchange for giving me a bunch of common elves, he took all my expensive rares.
You got rolled! First
yep.
thing!
Yep,
oh, boy.
Pretty much, but he and I are still friends to this day, and I don't know, it's basically responsible to him, you know? Like, he was also the person who was like, hey, we should go to a tournament. And I was like, whoa, they have tournaments for this? You know? Like, I just had no idea.
Awesome. Is this someone who still plays Magic?
His name is Adam Gunderson. He does live in Minnesota. I think he's, like, in the Duluth area, though. But when they used to have, like, real PTQs, he would come down to whatever Misty Mountain used to be. Like, Steve's store.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, that's awesome. So cool. We are located in Minnesota, in case people didn't know. So we love that you're from here. Do you ever come back to your home state?
So I was born in 1984, and I moved away when I was 21. So I think at that point it was like Magic Online was not huge and there wasn't a ton of stuff like Magic wise on the internet. So I don't think much was going on then. I think there was just like the one store, and then I moved back like 5 years later. And at that point there was just like a bunch of stores, like Monster Den was one that I played at a lot, and Dreamers and stuff. And then I lived there for like 2 years or so, and then eventually moved away again. But it is nice getting back and like seeing people, and especially like once Magic kind of exploded and all the stores popped up and stuff, like I made a bunch of new friends just from being back for like that little short period of time.
Yeah.
Awesome. So back when you got this common elf deck, and you went to this first tournament, like what captured your imagination about Magic, or like what brought you into the game?
So at first it was very much just the fantasy element of it. It was just like I opened a pack and it had an Ebon Dragon in it. This is like Portal, the first Portal, and Ebon Dragon is not like a real Magic card or whatever, but the art was just badass. You know? it was so cool. And I was like pretty big into art. I did some drawing, and like when I was a kid, I haven't really done anything since then. But like occasionally I would just like take a sweet looking Magic card and draw that, you know? But once I started playing with Adam, it was pretty clear that like his understanding of the game and my understanding of the game were not the same thing. He taught me just like all the fundamentals, just like about card advantage and stuff like that. And it just like blew my mind and just kind of like opened up all these doors where I was like, oh, this is like not as simple as I thought it was. And then I think we started like going to the library during lunch and just like printing off Magic articles from like Mind Ripper and just like these websites that I'm sure you two have just never heard of, you know?
No, I have can safely say I've never been to mindripper.themeforest.
Yeah.
Whatever it used to be back then. GeoCities.
Yeah, GeoCities were pretty big. The Dojo was another big one. But yeah, like those things don't exist anymore. They're awesome. Like people would just write tournament reports for all their PTQs and stuff. And it was just super sweet. Just like reading all these ideas that other people had. And I was like, okay, yeah, we can do this. You know, like I could also have these ideas, and slowly but surely I learned, you know, like what cards existed, started building my own decks and stuff, and then it kind of just took off from there.
That's kind of interesting because I love hearing stories from kind of the beginning of Magic when there wasn't a one-stop shop where you just went and net decked and you just copied somebody else's deck. But while the Dojo may have existed, there was still a lot of opportunity for you to innovate back then.
Yeah, there was actually just like a lot of incentive to keep things secret and not post everything, you know? Like nowadays just kind of like, especially by the time the first Pro Tour happens, like the standard format is kind of figured out. Like generally most of the decks have been found. Like there are so many people working on all these different cards and interactions and stuff that eventually like all of them just kind of get figured out, and that wasn't the case back in the day. It was much different, and I think I enjoyed it a little bit more, but you know, now things are different, and I have to look for new things to enjoy, basically.
Yeah, it seems kind of, like, exciting, like the Wild Wild West of Magic. Maybe someday we'll have a Wild Wild West plane, and it won't be as bad as that movie with Will Smith.
What? Are you calling that movie bad?
You like that movie?
I honestly haven't seen it in, like, a decade, so I couldn't give you an honest opinion.
I haven't seen it at all, so.
Okay.
What? I do think you're at least supposed to have seen it, right?
I mean...
It's like Will Smith's movie.
No, Men in Black is Will Smith's movie.
I agree with that.
They're all Will Smith's movies.
Well, that's true.
I feel like he owns it pretty hard, anything that he's in.
Yeah.
He, like, wrote this song and everything, didn't he?
Yeah.
Okay. And moving on, you guys.
Men in Black. Okay, anyway, Will Smith.
Weird tangent.
Great guy. Anyway, so, like, you're saying you started off, you loved playing, you kind of liked the experience of finding decks online and kind of innovating as well. How did that lead you to where you became sort of a pro player where you're attempting to, like, make a go of it?
So I was 15 when I started playing, probably 16 when I went to my first actual tournament. And then I started playing Sanctioned Magic when I was, like, 17 or 18. So then graduated high school, and just at that point, I was like, I knew I didn't want to work a 9-to-5 job, and I didn't really want to go to college just because I didn't know what I wanted to study. You know, I just had no idea what I wanted to do with myself, basically. So in the meantime, I kept playing Magic because it was really fun and it was great, and just got to hang out with my friends and stuff. And I tried to make that work, basically, just by, like, you know, winning tournaments, buying and selling cards, stuff like that. Like, at that point, there wasn't really a market for people to just write articles and stuff. So I did that for a little bit, about 3 years or so, and then a friend of mine started a poker room. So then he just, like, called me and was like, hey, do you want a job? Like, you have to move to Indiana. And I was like, yeah, sure, sounds good. So I did that for, like, 2.5-3 years, and in that time played a lot of Magic. And the guys that I was living with were also, like, very, very accomplished, too, like Gabe Walls, Neil Reeves, like, names. I don't know if you've heard of them or not. Like, they're not Hall of Fame, but they're, like, good enough to be in the Hall of Fame. So, yeah, I got a lot better during that time and was playing a lot of Magic online, going to the occasional Grand Prix and doing pretty well. But mostly I was just working, like, 40 to 60 hours a week. And then that got shut down because it was not very legal. And
it was a little bit legal, though.
It was gray area. You know, that's a whole other story. And maybe you'll have another podcast for that at some point. I don't know. But
for another time. I mean, are you a poker player, too?
When I moved back to Minnesota, I was playing a little bit of poker because they have Canterbury. And that place is great. And the guy I was living with, Tim Bulger, also played poker professionally. So I just, you know, started playing there with him. But during this time, like, when I started dealing poker, I did not know the rules of the game. So it was like pretty embarrassing, pretty awkward. But
talk about it, like, yeah. Cojones, like, just walking up to the table like, here's your cards.
Yeah, I mean, I picked it up quickly, you know, but but, like, the first couple of weeks were definitely rough, and I had a lot of people that are just like, what is this kid doing, you know? But after that stuff ended, I was like, well, I'm unemployed now. What am I going to do with myself? And then I turned back to Magic again and was like, well, let's see if we can make this work. So started playing Magic online, and it was tough to make a living doing that, but people did, and I did, and that one was less glamorous, far less glamorous than what I'm doing now, you know? Just, like, playing out, like, all these tournaments as much as you could per week, just, like, trying to sell your tickets into actual dollars and maybe, like, speculating on some cards and stuff. And it's just, like, maybe you make, like, an extra $200 a week past living expenses, you know? It was not great.
Oh, wow.
Ooh, yeah, rough.
That sounds like a grind.
Yeah.
It is. But then at some point, I just assume this was Patrick Chapin because he's been involved in a lot of the big decisions in my life. I think he was just like, you need to start writing articles. And I'm just like, Patrick, I'm scared. I don't know how to write, you know? And he was just like, no, just do it. You need to do this. Like, this will make your life better. And I'm just like, okay, man, sure. So I started doing that and started me out like $100 an article, you know? So I'm making like $400 a month off of this. And at that point it was like pretty good money, you know? Like, now I can actually buy some stuff, right? And then, yeah, just over time, like, every year, just things got better and better. You know, like, there was more money in Magic. There were more tournaments. I guess, like, the payouts on Magic Online got worse, but I was able to, like, make more writing and in real life. So I had to lean on that less, which was great. And, yeah, just 8-10 years later, here we are.
Awesome. That's kind of crazy.
No, I know. Yeah, it's like, I don't know if I would ever be brave enough to just kind of say, you know what? I'm just going to try and, like, live off of Magic, and I'm going to you know, play a lot online and hope that I make enough money for this week, or like start writing articles. Like, I don't know. Part of me thinks that it's really brave to be able to do that kind of jump without a net in a way.
Or foolish. At least one of the two.
Yeah.
We're not saying they're exclusionary. No, like, no. You can have one and the other.
So there was actually a month where Magic Online transitioned from version 2 to version 3, and it was supposed to be down for a week, and it was down for a month.
I
literally just couldn't pay rent with Magic Online that month, and like that was the month where I played online poker pretty hard.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But it was just like, this thing happened. I was just like, oh God,
I have
no money. What am I supposed to do? You know?
Well, you made it. You made it to contemporary day and an article and a video a week. So these days, what's your favorite format to play?
Basically, whatever the next tournament is, you know, it's just, I find ways to enjoy whatever aspects of each format exist. If there was a format that I could choose to just play, like, for every tournament ever, would be like 2002 Extended.
What is that?
What did you love about 2002 Extended?
So it's kind of similar to Legacy, where they made an exception where the dual lands were legal, like the Tundra Underground Sea stuff was legal, but like cards from Revise were not.
Okay.
So it was very strange, but it felt kind of like Legacy now, except without all the busted stuff, like. Lion's Eye Diamond was not an insane card because there wasn't Infernal Tutor or Ad Nauseam. Like, Show and Tell was legal, but there just wasn't anything good enough to show and tell into play.
what's that like?
Yeah, exactly. Oath of Druids was legal, but you were getting, like, Spike Feeder off it. You know, just like, there were no Gristlebrands, no Emrakuls, none of that. And the format just felt really nice, clean, and fair. You know, you got to play some cool cards. You had Brainstorm, but the fetches were, like, the Mirage fetch lands that ETB tapped.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. Like, have you noticed? I mean, obviously you've noticed, but how do you feel about sort of the transition? Because back then, like, creatures were terrible and spells were more powerful, and now it's kind of flip-flopped.
Well, back then I was the guy with the spells, and I was like, oh man, look how clever I am. This is so great. You're playing these stupid creatures. I'll just kill all of them. Who cares, you know? And after years of just getting pummeled by, like, insane creatures and the very aggressive planeswalkers, too, those have just been, like, a huge thorn in my side. Now I've shifted from, like, the Psychotog or whatever blue-base control deck guy to either the tempo guy or the midrange guy. Like, that's basically all I play now. And I'm kind of doing the same thing that Brad is, where it's just, like, I'm only interested in winning. I only want to play the best deck. And let's figure out what the best green deck is, basically, because it's usually green.
Is it really?
For standard, it is, I think.
Huh.
Interesting.
I wonder why.
And do you think that's just, like, creature quality, or what do you think's making green the best color in standard?
Generally has, like, the best early game and the best mid game, but not necessarily the best late game. So, like, you have the best cards at, like, 2 to 5 mana. You have a lot of built-in card advantage, and you don't have the removal, but you just go to some other color for that, basically.
Do you like having to always play the best deck? Well, I mean, winning's great. Winning's fun. But is there ever a deck that you're like, ooh, I wish this was the best deck just because it's so much more fun to play?
Well, this is kind of a new thing for me because, like, you look at my numbers, you read off, like, oh, 10 Grand Prix top 8s, whatever. Like, that's not bad. That is certainly, like, a good number. But this is also over the course of, like, 15 years. So you see people like Owen or Brad or Reed who top 8, like, 3 to 6 Grand Prix a year or whatever, and I have less than 1 a year. So when you look at it that way, it's like, oh, I'm kind of underperforming. I wonder why that is. It's probably because I'm playing bad decks. So yeah, I went to Wizards for a little bit. We could probably talk about that at some point, but I came back and I was just like, no, like, I just want to win. I was basically starting from zero. I want to get back on the Pro Tour gravy train and stuff. And it was like, I realized that I could just mess around with these decks that I enjoy playing on Magic Online, just kind of get that out of my system, and then just try and win the tournaments, and that was it.
Sure.
Yeah. So you mentioned, like, you, like, looking at your wins over, like, the course of your pro career. Like, you feel like you might be, like, you're playing bad decks. What do you feel like your strength is as a player?
So the majority of my Grand Prix top 8s are limited. I think it is 7-3, which I think most people don't realize. And in limited, I don't ever have that feeling where I just want to, like, be loose. And, like, you know, like Luis would do, is just like take the Hexblade Golem and draft some like goofy deck, right?
Yeah. Fevered Visions.
Yeah, I don't have that urge. I don't know why. In Constructed, I have that urge a lot. So for Constructed, it's very easy for me to just like explain away things where it's just like, oh yeah, like this is the best deck, but it's going to be really targeted and like people are set out to hate it and stuff. That's like, yeah, that's true, probably, but like, does that matter? Not really. So I generally end up like getting too cutesy and stuff, but for Limited, I just like always keep it tight, and I think I just need to like move that into Constructed. But as far as like Constructed specifically, I think I am really good at honing in on things that matter in the respective matchups and figuring out that stuff. So I might play a bad deck, but it's like I know what matters in the matchups and I know how to address that, but oftentimes I'm operating at such a big disadvantage already that it just doesn't help me.
It's interesting to hear too that you aren't worried if you're like, oh, I think everybody's gonna come in and hate on this deck. You're like, well, it's still the best, so I'm still gonna play it.
So back in the day, there were cards like Chill and Gloom and like Boil, Choke. You know, some of this stuff exists in Modern now, but for the most part, like the hate cards or the things that people can do to try and attack the best deck are not very effective. They're certainly not effective to the point where it's just like you just should not show up playing that deck. It's like, yeah, maybe they give you like 5% in matchup equity or something, but it's really not that big of a deal. And also people could just be wrong. They might just be misidentifying what actually makes your deck good.
And, you know, sometimes too, I think that, well, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems to me that we worry too much about being, like, reactive to what has happened the weekend before, and, like, the strongest deck's just going to still stay the strongest deck despite the four cards that people add in. I don't know.
So a good example, I think, is Green-White Tokens. Like, it won the Pro Tour, it was super big in Toronto, and then it has kept winning, and then last week it still just won both Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's just like, okay, like, are people not trying to beat this deck, you know, because it keeps winning, right? But you gotta imagine that people are trying to beat it and they just keep failing. And I don't think the deck is just, you know, far and away busted, like the best deck or whatever, but it's just like a good deck in a sea of good decks, but it still keeps winning despite having a target on its head. So next week I have a standard tournament, I'm probably gonna play green white.
Yeah. fair enough.
Oh, jinx. So you mentioned, like, you disappeared for a bit while you were working for Wizards.
Disappeared.
they came and kidnapped you in the middle of the night.
That's how they do.
Put that you is, in a box and sent you to Seattle.
That is kind of what it felt like. Part of it was moving from coast to coast. You know, I was so far removed from, like, the majority of the Magic scene and just, like, most of my friends and stuff. It did feel like I was just in another country, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Seattle is its own country in a way. Just because it takes so long to drive into it, it might as well be.
Oh, I made that drive. It was not great.
Oh, boy. So what was your time like there working for Wizards? What were you doing?
So it was great. I was an intern for development. And shortly after I left, the Glassdoor thing happened. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm reading this Glassdoor stuff, and I'm just like, man, people don't like working here. I don't understand. I had a great time, you know? But as it turns out, like, when you work in R&D, like, no one gives you any hassle whatsoever, you know? It's like, the people in R&D are just, like, the golden children just, like, making the Magic cards awesome. And I just never felt any of that whatsoever. So I was really confused. Like, my time there was super great. I was working with a bunch of smart people, and I kind of feel like I'm cheating too, because I think it made me a lot better at Magic too.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, awesome. Like, in what ways do you feel like working in development helped you become a better Magic player?
So they have a system for evaluating Limited cards, and while I do think that I was pretty good at Limited, this kind of just, like, I don't know, tightened up the process for me a little bit, where I was like, now I can look at a set and kind of guess as to what they expected that card to be. So it's like they'll rate things A, B, or C, and I can look at the uncommons and be like, okay, this is likely the best uncommon because this just looks like it is kind of overdeveloped a little bit and things like that. So it's just like I have like kind of this insider information that other people don't have.
Did you get to work and develop any cards while you were there?
I did. So I worked on the entirety of the Cons of Tarkir block, And my first day there was actually just like going upstairs. Dave Humphrey's taking me into a room. And he's just like, all right, the block that we're working on is Khans of Tarkir. It is, you know, these five wedges. These are their names. These are their colors. This is what they're about. And also the block has fetch lands. And I'm just like, okay. And then he just printed me out all the card files for the sets that were in the FFL for Standard, like their future league, where they test Standard and try and balance the cards and stuff. And he was just like, look through all these card files, build some decks, don't talk to anyone. We want your just like unbiased opinion, you know, like we want to see what someone looking at these cards for the first time would do. And I was just like, this is awesome.
Do you remember any cards that you at the time were like, this card is sick?
So we basically only focused on Standard and Limited. So things like Treasure Cruise, you can point to me and be like, dude, you know, what'd you do?
What did you do, Jerry?
And my thing is like, well, look, you know, how was the card Limited? Oh, it was just like perfectly reasonable. How was it in Standard? It's like, okay, it's like kind of on the edge, right? But it's perfectly fine. It never ended up getting banned. It was never dominant, anything like that. So I was like, all right, I think I did a good job on that. There was a card I got killed in Fate Reforged, which was like 5B and had Delve, and it like got all the activated abilities of all the creatures that you delved away to cast it.
Oh, yeah. I remember that guy.
Mm-hmm. No. That card got killed.
Oh, well, so, there was one that was like that,
It became Soul Flayer.
Ah, yes. Okay.
Which gets like all the passive ability, like all the flying, lifelink, whatever.
Oh, this one got the activated.
I get it.
Okay. Yeah, so it was like if you delve away a Gristlebrand, for example.
Oh. Huh. Yeah. Whoa. I can see. Yep.
Yeah, so occasionally things like that would happen where I'm like, okay, red flags are going off here, you know, like I'm gonna bring this up, right? And then Dave was eventually just like, okay, you know, I'll make it a new card, whatever. And then he made Soul Flayer, which I think is like both more fun and just, you know, a better card to have around. There were some tweaks that I got made to cards like Rattleclaw Mystic used to just be G for an 0/1 that morphed for G but didn't have the like make mana ability. So just kind of like the Teemer Noble Hierarch basically. Mm-hmm. And in FFL we had that card and Elvish Mystic, and I beat up on people a lot with decks that had 8/1 mana elves when everyone else was playing like these three color decks with a bunch of tri-lands that ETB tapped and stuff.
Yeah.
So it was just like you're on the play with your mono green deck with these 8/1 mana producing things, and their first two turns are tap lands. It's just like you get out ahead of them so quickly.
And great job, by the way, because I think it's like universally known that Khans of Tarkir is a great set to play with.
It's sick.
You know, we play a lot of limited, and it's just a great draft environment for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like how the limited format turned out a lot, and I appreciate the kind words, but I did a small part, you know, like. Everyone else there was doing much more than me. I was in a position where I was just like, I'm not even sure if the things I'm saying are even close to correct, you know? So it's like, I'm kind of scared to speak up a little bit. I'm just trying to like hang out and absorb information.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, you should go ahead and just still take Maria's nice words, because from now on, I'm going to hold you personally responsible for Siege Rhino.
Okay, listen, there's another story involving Siege Rhino. It changed late. I thought the drain for 3 was excessive. We decided it was too late to change anything. That's my story.
I heard about Siege Rhino.
Sure.
Why it has trample is because there was a card that, what was it?
First response,
the pregnancy test, aka
put
soldiers out, and people are like, that's going to be, you know, it's basically like a Bitter Blossom, so we better make a card that can fight that deck, and then that deck just never happened.
Correct. That is all factual.
That's one of my favorite stories.
It is really good. There's a lot of cool stories too, just from things that happened in Wizards, like not necessarily while I was there, but certainly around the time I was there. You know, like Liliana of the Veil was in M15 at some point.
Oh snap!
So then Adam Prozac was, I think, the person who was hired before me, and he got there and he was just like, guys, you can't do this. you can't do this. And they're like, why not? You know, like prove it to us or whatever. So he just beat them up with a bunch of Liliana of the Veil decks. And he was like, see, you know? So yeah, those things happen occasionally. It's pretty fun.
It's got to be like Kid in the Candy Store to be a part of the Future League, right? I mean, like, you're on the forefront. You're developing these decks before anybody has even had the chance to see the cards.
Yeah, but like, I... So I'm a person who is like, kind of, kind of emotional, I guess. I get, like, attached to decks and ideas and stuff, and then it's just, like, for the first couple weeks, it was like, oh, I made this cool deck, and then they're like, yeah, that deck's too good, we're killing your card. And I'm just like, oh, no, but then this deck won't exist anymore, and then, you know, I just had to get over it, right? Because, like, that was my job, was to just, like, figure out what was too good, what was not good enough, and just, like, mostly my job was making cards worse, just in general. So yeah, it did sting a little bit at times because I was like, oh, I really like this card, and they're like, it's dead.
Did they send you a sympathy card to your desk in your office mail?
Condolences.
There was zero sympathy whatsoever, but that's what was necessary, you know? Like they had to remove those feelings from you, right? Because you can't get attached to your stuff because then you're never gonna want to kill it.
You never want
to kill your darlings, right? That's the thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a video editor, and they always say kill your babies. And you know, like in the end, it's like actually really good advice. You should because
it is absolutely.
It cuts the fat away in a way. Yeah. This metaphor, kill the babies, kill your darlings, is a much better way of saying it. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Wording choices.
Yeah. Got it.
But yeah, in a general sense, it was a lot of fun. The people were really smart. A lot of them were people that I like PTQ'd with back in the day and stuff. So that was fun, just kind of like reconnecting with old friends and stuff. I learned a lot about just Magic and how the game is made, and even just like other processes that go on with Wizards of the Coast and stuff. So overall, it was a very good experience. But the one downside was that I couldn't play competitive Magic.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like a big part of my identity, you know, like that was a thing that I had done for like the last decade or so. And then I couldn't do anything anymore. I just didn't know what to do with myself because it was like normally if I was working, if I was doing something else like dealing poker or whatever, I would come home and then I would just like start working on Magic stuff. And that was what I did for fun. And then for this, it was just like, well, I don't really want to like bring work home with me. You know, we're advised to basically not do that because they don't want the R&D people to burn out. Right.
Yeah.
So it's just like, all right, I just have to go home and just like twiddle my thumbs, I guess. Like I have nothing to do. So yeah. That was about it. No, just like that was the reason I left.
Yeah. Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, do you have any hobbies that people don't know about? Like that, I mean, are you a movie buff? Do you like reading mystery novels? Or are you a thumb twiddler?
So thumb twiddling is not my favorite thing. No, I typically like to keep busy. I do mostly normal stuff. Like I read a decent amount. I watch TV, watch movies. I do like anime a lot. I don't know. Just like pretty normal stuff. I used to be like much bigger into music, and I would go to concerts a decent amount. You know, like living in Minnesota kind of helped that because there were like a bunch of good venues and stuff.
Yeah. But,
we do have some sick music venues.
First Ave, man.
Yep. First Ave is what's up.
So going back really quickly to like just like your time in development, and as a professional Magic player.
Yeah.
If you could change one thing about Magic, what would you change about it?
I don't know. That's not really a fair question, I guess. You're asking me to kind of kill my darling, right?
Yeah, exactly. Listen,
you can say you that. Said every, that
they,
I mean,
they taught you to be ruthless.
Yeah, so
be ruthless.
The what was Brad's answer? Because I remember. Okay, so let me preface this by saying
we can go through everybody's. I remember Ifro's answer.
I have a specific story with this. So I remember listening to the cast that you did with Brad, which he did from my house. You know? And. I don't remember exactly what his answer was, but I was like, dude, that was really smart. Like, where'd you come up with that or whatever? And he's like, no, you told me that. And I was like, that makes sense for why I thought it sounded smart.
I feel like we're getting into a weird Inception loop here, where it's like, we have to go back and listen to what Brad said, because that's what Jerry said, and then Jerry's going to say it again.
So what was his answer? Do you remember?
Did it have something to do with... Oh, I want to say mana, but maybe it didn't.
No, it was discard.
Okay, oh, yes, yeah, it was
size,
discard.
Hand size. Yep. That's what it was.
Yeah, you shouldn't have to discard a hand size. It doesn't make any sense. But, yeah, that's the one that came to my mind. I was like, wait a sec, is this happening again? You know, like, I don't want to give the same answer as Brad.
Even though it was your answer.
Yeah, I know. I find that as I get older, my mind is less and less sharp, you know? It's pretty sad.
You're so ancient. We're the same age.
You guys are so old.
We're so old, Megan.
That's fair. If you want to, if you want to say, like, we'll go back and we'll edit.
We'll
Brad's
just edit
answer.
Brad right yeah. into this show.
Yeah.
Oh, I was gonna say we can do a voiceover for Brad where he gives a different answer.
Oh, okay.
No, you know, I have a good one actually. Okay. I figured it out. Okay, so both of you play a lot of limited or a decent mm-hmm. amount, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you generally enjoy doing like cube drafts and stuff too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like limited is kind of dying. I think it's kind of sad, but I understand why. You know, like, there are so many constructed articles, constructed tournaments, because people want to push the sales of cards and singles and stuff.
Yeah.
And, yeah, limited just kind of gets forgotten about. So I think that something they should try and do is to kind of, like, power up the limited formats and make them a little bit more exciting, like, a little bit more cube-centric instead of, like, grizzly bear-centric, just because that stuff's, like, kind of boring, kind of played out, and, you know, people get excited by, like, the Shivan Dragons and, like, the awesome cards. They don't get excited by Grizzly Bear. That just doesn't happen.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, what if... Sometimes I wish that limited and constructed, like, standard could be two completely separate things so that they could release a set that would play just like a normal limited set, like it's designed to be drafted, like Modern Masters or whatever, and then... You know, standard would be separate so they didn't have to worry about cards being completely busted for the limited players. And I know it's impossible, but...
Well, I think it is kind of great that you draft and then you open, like, a Snapcaster Mage or something, and then you're, like, incentivized to build a deck around the Snapcaster Mage. And, yeah, I think EMA, MMA, stuff like that, those sets are all really cool. People enjoy drafting them, and they're a lot of fun, and that's because I think they feel more like cube draft. And it's not like... Yeah. Not like, you know, SOI Limited is fun, but I think it is mostly fun for people that already enjoy Limited.
Yeah, I would be so sad if Limited died. That would be the lowest point of my life.
I don't want to alarm you, but I do think it's close.
Are you serious?
I think it is. I mean, I think the numbers are just really bad. Like, whenever someone posts, like, a Limited article on Star City or whatever, like, the hits are just not very good. I mean, there are things like Limited Resources where people just love it. But for the most part, people don't really devour limited content that much.
Hmm.
Yeah, I agree that that's very true. And it's worrisome. It would be sad.
It really would be.
It really would be.
I mean, I played in my very first standard event this past weekend. So,
that's correct.
Like,
okay.
That's been it for me.
Now you're becoming part of the problem.
Yeah, now I am.
Become just
I'm the
another
monster.
Standard player.
A year from now, it's going to be so bad. You're going to be like, oh, when's the next Legacy tournament, right? I can't wait to play that. And then someone's going to be like, hey, do you want to, like, cube at my house? You're like, no, I have to play test.
I'll call you up to draft. And I'll be like, Maria, we never draft anymore. I don't see you.
I'm like, no, Megan, get away. I'm testing all of my Legacy and Vintage decks.
Yeah, you filthy casual. Get out of here.
But no, like, oh, I mean, like, just seeing the number of limited Grand Prix.
Well, yeah.
From, I think, just when we started playing, even, which was only 4 years ago, to now, the number has decreased substantially, and it wasn't that great of a number to begin with.
Yeah, that's true, and it's tough.
I don't think that's a slight to, like, limited players or anything. I think it is just representative of the formats that people actually want to play, and that sucks. It's sad.
Yeah, all right, we're going to be over here drafting a solution to this.
Drafting a solution?
Spread the good word of limited and all of its joys.
We certainly try.
I will preach.
We certainly try.
The church? Would you go to the Church of Limited on Sundays? Except when you go, you draft. Or
I feel like I do that on Tuesdays. Isn't that, like, just already?
Yeah, that's just already what happens in our
lives.
Anyways. So I wanted to ask you a question we ask everybody who comes on this show, which is if you had a tip to have players that would people could use to get better, what's, like, your number one tip for people to improve their game?
It's kind of a long, convoluted thing, but it is basically just, like, always realize that you could be wrong and absorb as much information as possible. And I think that was a thing that I just naturally wanted to do, like, you know, when I was sitting in the library during lunch, like, reading these articles, I just wanted all the information because I just had so little of it, you know? And now I think at this point, like, there's plenty of information out there, so it's kind of overwhelming, but, like, if you can read one article and someone is saying something completely different than someone else in another article, right? So it's like you kind of have to parse that stuff too. So it's much more difficult. But, like, once people get these thoughts in their head where it's just like, nope, like, this is the deck I'm playing. It's 100% correct. And it's just like that's almost never true. You know, like you're almost always making mistakes somewhere, and just realize that you might not always be right. And that's it. And yeah, just be willing to fail in that regard, I guess, because it's just going to happen inevitably. And I see a lot of people who are like, you know, telling bad beat stories or just like, I played perfectly and still lost. And no, that's probably not true. But
yeah. I mean, it's tough too to admit that, and it's harder even still to fail and be okay with your failure. But I think once that comes into your life, it makes a lot of things more easy, and you don't like beat yourself up so bad every time like you misplay or you make an incorrect sideboarding decision or whatever.
Yeah, I feel magic mostly as just one giant process. Like there is no end point, there's no end goal, because I realized a long time ago that, you know, say my goal is like, I want to win a pro tour. Once I get there, I'm not going to be like, all right, I'm done. I'm going to be like, nope, I want to win like 2 pro tours, or I want to win worlds or whatever. Like, it's never going to end. So just focus on improving and bettering yourself, and eventually like your results will come. So don't put too much emphasis just on the results. Just, you know, be a little more open-minded. Don't worry so much about what happens in the short term, and eventually good things will happen.
Sweet. Awesome. That's good advice.
Yeah. Also, you recently started a podcast.
I did.
Congratulations. Welcome.
Tell us everything.
Thank you. It has been very difficult.
You're right. It is so hard.
tell us a little bit about what your podcast is about and who you're working with.
So I'm working with a couple of dudes named Michael Majors and Andrew Brown. Although I guess I said their name in the wrong order, because Jerry Andrew Michael spells G-A-M. We pronounce it as Game, the Game Podcast. I thought that was pretty cute. it leaves us kind of like pigeonholed into always keeping the same 3 people all the time. So I don't know if I like that or not. But
you can find someone whose name starts with the letter E and just put them on the end.
That is true. But then, you know, I don't know if Andrew leaves or something, whatever. But anyway, so I am locked for gold once I get my 3 pro points from PT Sydney. Andrew, I think, is already locked, and Michael Majors just recently locked up platinum. So we are 3 professional level players just talking about Magic week to week, and I don't think something like this really exists, you know, where it's just like a lot of people that are like really spiky and play Magic basically every weekend just want to sit down and talk about Magic. So We're catering to a very select group of people, and, you know, maybe that's not the greatest as far as, like, you know, reaching the larger audience or whatever, but it's something that we thought should actually just be done, so we did it.
Yeah, no, that's awesome.
No, I think that's correct, too.
Right now, it's just all of us goddamn amateurs running around the podcast circuit.
So, where can people find this podcast if they want to hear it?
So I just got on Stitcher, I think, this morning.
Yay!
We are on SoundCloud. I'm working on getting on iTunes and getting our own website and stuff. We are on Twitter at The Game, G-A-M Podcast. And basically, like, me, Andrew, and Michael are, like, kind of promoting the hell out of it, too, just whenever we have a new episode. And it's basically just every Thursday, you know, something should be published.
I like it being called The Game, especially, like, what would you need to put over the A to make it the long, like, the line over it?
Yeah, just a hard line. That was actually what I wanted to do for the little iTunes thumbnail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just cool.
Like, yeah, so people don't mess up the pronunciation. I like it.
It's very, like, kind of Swedish looking. Like, did you buy The Game at IKEA and put it together? It's like some kind of dresser. What?
Yep,
they have weird, no, they put marks over their letters in Sweden.
What? I thought that they just spelled everything weird.
I feel like I've at least seen an umlaut.
I think if it was a Swedish name, they'd have to pronounce it game, but it would be like G-K-A-M.
Yeah, that's true.
That is probably true.
I have a question that's been burning in my mind ever since you brought up Brad Nelson's episode of Magic the Prothering, which was during that episode, your smoke alarm went on. And I just need to know, did you burn that pizza?
No, of course not.
Yes!
Pizza saved. I am not an amateur, all right? at least for pizza making.
Fair enough.
Okay,
fair enough.
Great,
we're
great.
Really glad to know that the pizza was safe.
Oh, I was worried about it for a long time.
We really
time.
Were.
It was delicious.
Final question, or for me anyway, that I was wondering about, which is totally selfish. Do you think Brad Nelson told me this past weekend that my mono white weenie human deck was the worst deck in Standard? What do you think about it?
He literally said that?
He said, I think, quote unquote, I think it's a terrible deck.
I think he said something, I think he
like
said
that.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think terrible was the word he used.
So, God. Brad is the worst. No, the thing that Brad doesn't realize is that it's not about just, like, picking the best deck and, like, playing that. Like, other people enjoy different things about Magic. And if you want to play your human deck and you just want to, like, tweak your human deck, you're just like, hey, man, are there some ways, like, I could improve this deck? And he's just like, cut all the planes and all the white creatures and add a bunch of, like, green monsters and black removal spells or whatever. You're not going to do that. But it's like, dude, I want to just play, like, this Thraben Inspector, you know? Like, just let me do this. Just tell me how to make it a little bit better. And he's just like, no, cut all those cards. But it's kind of annoying.
But you love him.
Yeah, he's great. I mean, that's the thing. Is like, Brad is who he is. I'm never going to try and change him at all because it's just not going to work. He is so set in his ways, and I love that about him. You know, he just is who he is. And one of the best things is, like, he can like, never be dishonest because he is always upfront about who he is and what he wants and everything else, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So true.
Agreed.
I was just worried that everybody would languish my deck into oblivion. Like,
yeah. Well,
if I played it this weekend,
I'm just gonna go ahead and say that you would deserve it. But like,
so have you seen the Red Splash ones? They like have Battlefield Forge,
yes,
main, Needle,
yeah,
Spires, and Gideon in the sideboard. Yeah, I think that's a good plan.
I kind of hybridized my deck, so I also had Gideon in the sideboard, and I like combined the two most popular white weenie decks. But I didn't put the Red Splash in, which I think I should have done. But other than that, I liked it. I don't know.
You gotta get those Needle Spires, bro.
Yeah, I gotta. That's how I'll get through. Okay. Noted. Yeah. Noted.
Well, see, that's like constructive advice, right? Like, that's helpful. Just, like, throw your deck in the garbage is not helpful.
I mean, depending on how you look at it, I think they're both helpful.
Whatever, Megan.
They're just different kinds of helpful.
Yeah, uh-huh. So what can where can people see you next?
So I have an SCG tour stop in Atlanta this weekend. And then, I would look at my calendar, but I messed up and I deleted all the things from my calendar because I'm real dumb.
Oh,
so I think GP Columbus is after that. Mm-hmm. There's a GP in Pittsburgh at some point. I haven't really looked at the SCG Tour schedule past that very much, so I don't know. I'm kind of a mess right now. But then PT GP Sydney and PT Sydney are coming up too.
Yeah, that's
sweet.
Gonna be cool.
So it sounds like you East Coast tournament circuit.
Anything that's within 8 hours driving distance, I'm generally there.
Sweet.
Sweet.
And I don't take very many weekends off.
Awesome.
I mean, yeah, you got to keep at it. That's the Magic life. Like you said, Magic never stops.
Really, it doesn't. Well. Just every weekend, there's something.
Well, thanks so much for taking time to talk to us, Jerry. It was really great hanging out with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.